I'll start off today with a confession. I've been keeping a secret from you all. For the last few weeks, I have been a part of a secret Facebook group. That's not as cool as it sounds. Actually, that's just a Facebook group that you have to ask to be a member of. And Canon Genevieve set up one of these before she left, a seekers forum in which some new members to the parish, along with a well-seasoned moderator and a priest, all have an opportunity to talk on Facebook and ask questions, get answers, and just get to know one another a little bit better. If this this sounds interesting to you, let me know, and we'll continue to put these things together as we move forward. But last evening, the question on the secret Facebook Seekers Forum group was, have you ever had a prayer answered? And my response was yes. And you'll have to come to church tomorrow to find out more. And you all will have to wait through the sermon to find out. Prayer and the answers to prayer seem to be the central theme of today's lesson from St. James's letter. And that's true. But in order to see the full power of his message, we must, as both Acma Adam and Robert Hoke pointed out this week in their commentaries, learn to appreciate this text in its wider context. These last several lines of St. James's letter are just that, the last several lines, his final word to the congregation. In that classic lectionary style, however, we are missing the beginning of his final word, and for those of you who are reaching back into your memory to remember last week's lesson from St. James, those weren't it. We get only the second half of chapter 5. And the first part, while not identical with last week's reading, is similar, so please allow me to recap. St. James ends his letter this way: put enmity and strife behind you. Be patient with one another. And be patient with God, particularly concerning the timing of his return. In the meantime, this week's lesson seems to say, are any of you suffering? Pray. Are any of you cheerful? Pray. Are any of you sick or committing sins? Pray. Now, that's all well and good and seems a very churchy thing to say, but let me break it down a bit. What St. James is encouraging his congregation to do is to talk. That's what prayer is, isn't it? Talking, or, yes, contemplative prayer, folks, the opposite of talking. But what he's done here is he's set up something of a polarity between two types of talk. Put away, he says, enmity and strife and backbiting and poking and picking, put away that type of talk and embrace a different kind of talk. Talk to God and talk to one another in prayer. As Dr. Acma points out, these should not be read quite as imperative commands. James, though cantankerous in other areas of his letter, is not bossing his congregation. He's not meeting their strife with a striving of his own. Rather, he is casting a beatific vision of what the ideal Christian community looks like as it moves forward through God's time. What do faithful people do during the in-between times of their life? Do they strive? Do they pick and poke and belittle? No. Faithful people pray. And that shouldn't strike us as anything new. St. James draws us into our history of the Old Testament. He bids us think of someone from the Old Testament. Think of an Old Testament character who was living in an in-between time, between, say, a promise and a fulfillment, or, oh, I don't know, between one country and another. Think about someone like that. You got somebody in your mind? It was Elijah, right? Nobody ever thinks of Elijah. Strangely, that's who St. James wants us to think of. Consider Elijah, he said, who was a human being like we are. Oh, what about Abraham or Sarah or Moses or Hannah? Why Elijah? The more I've thought about this, I think that Elijah has something more important to teach us. He lived in an in-between time. And frankly, he was given over by his natural state to that kind of, well, being difficult to deal with that St. James is talking about. Nobody liked Elijah. And he returned the favor. He was known for strife. In praying, St. James says, he stopped the rain. Yes, that is true, but he was also forced to do something else. Through his prayer, Elijah put himself in an interesting position. He put himself into the hands of others. During the 3 years and the 6 months of the drought, was it not God that provided for Elijah as he subsisted along the Wadi Cherubim? And was it not the widow of Zarephath who provided for Elijah as he sojourned outside of the nation? Elijah's prayer, therefore, did more than simply start and stop the rain. Elijah's prayer changed Elijah. And this is James's point about our prayer. Why should we who live between the resurrection and the day of the Lord keep praying? Because our words are powerful and effective, but even more than we tend to think. When it comes to curing the sick, our prayers are powerful and effective. When it comes to covering sins, our prayers are powerful and effective, but our prayers are also powerful and effective in the way that they change us. They change us both personally. And they change our church into the type of community that can endure until Christ returns. St. James, with his parting words to his congregation, is bidding the kind of talk, the kind of sharing, the kind of being together that will form this group of cantankerous souls into the type of church that will last 2,000 years or even more. So I promised you a story about a prayer. When I was 20 years old, I was diagnosed with chronic autoimmune disease. Throughout my 20s and into my 30s, I wrestled with this mightily, seeking relief from doctors and hospitals and centers of care up and down the East Coast, constantly frustrated by the refrain, "Mr. Callahan, you are incurable. This will just be the new normal for you." All of that time, I kept this information largely a secret. My parents knew, and my spouse for sure, a few other select church leaders, but I did not talk about it openly among friends or within the community. This was not something I was going to burden the church with. About 7 years ago, in the quiet of a side sacristy, I shared with a priest that had come as a part of a healing mission to an Order of St. Luke's conference, I shared with him of my disease. And he prayed, and he laid his hands on me, and he anointed me with oil. And for 7 years, I have been symptom-free. Am I cured? I don't know. That's the funny thing about chronic illness. The doctors tell you that you have it from the time that you're born. And then they say things like, well, I guess maybe you never had it in the first place. All I know is that I have achieved a new normal. And don't get me wrong, as the gray hairs in my beard suggest, I am still subject to the type of aging and other problems that plague us all. But here's what I do know about my life. For 7 years, I am more patient with my body. For 7 years, I am more willing to share with others of my disease. And I am more fit for waiting. Of my disease's potential return, of the furtherance of my life, waiting for the day of the Lord's return. Are any among you suffering? You should pray. Are any among you cheerful? You should sing songs of joy and praise. Are any among you sick or sinning? You should call together the church and pray. For the prayers of the faithful are powerful and effective. Amen.